Book of Psalms. It's going to be Psalms 93. It's going to be Psalms 92, sorry. All right, Psalms 92. Let's go ahead and read from the top. I won't re-preach what I've already taught, okay? But Psalms 92:1, it is a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord, to sing praises unto thy name, O Most High, to show forth thy loving kindness in the morning, thy faithfulness every night, upon an instrument of 10 strings, upon the psaltery, upon the harp with a solemn sound. For thou, Lord, hast made me glad through thy work. I will triumph in the works of thy hands. And then it says in verse 5, which is where we covered last time, says, O Lord, how great are thy works? Thy thoughts are very deep. So we were talking about the thoughts of the Lord, and it says that the thoughts are very deep. I went for a little while on that, then we closed. I'd just like you to think about the fact that, you know, it's common to say that, you know, the Lord made man, and we're the only part of the creation that has the capability of dealing with words, because the Lord wanted us to access and to go through and to know his thoughts about things. Now, folks, the thing about that involves, and we kind of closed with it last time, is that so the Lord didn't write a book in which you got, you know, text messages, just little blurbs, little bubbles with four words all, you know, an acronym and all that kind of stuff. He wrote you a book that with 1,300 or 1,400 pages in it, that is, you know, the knowledge in it is built precept upon precept. It's something to be pondered and meditated on for the entirety of your Christian life. This is not something you just receive in little, you know, scoops and bits and pieces. This is something that's you're supposed to invest your life in. So these thoughts are very deep, and I wanted to point out to you just a couple more things before we move on. Look in Jeremiah 23:20. In Jeremiah 23, you have a sovereign, eternal God. I don't think Calvinism is sovereign when I say that. But he's omniscient. He knows everything. And so the idea of being able to access a mind like that is an extraordinary thought. Jeremiah 23, and go on down to verse 20 real quick. 23:20, where he says, the anger of the Lord shall not return until he have executed and until he have performed the thoughts of his heart. In the latter days ye shall consider it perfectly. Now, I know that's just a snapshot of a verse, but he has spent all the entirety of the Old Testament prophesying. And he's saying that he intends to carry out all the thoughts of his heart in time prophetically. So the fact that we have a God that's willing to write a book to forewarn us of all that's going to happen is a remarkable thing. And so you ought to labor to try to digest those things. And I know nobody ever gets it memorized, nobody ever gets it down entirely, because your mind is very limited, right? It's very, very, you know, some of us have more boundaries than others. But the Lord's thoughts are very deep, and you ought to labor, and you ought to be honored that he would expose himself as much to you as he does. You know, most gods would just, sovereign, omniscient, omnipotent gods would just tell you what to do and if you don't, just zap you. Instead, it's very plain that what he wants you to do is access his mind and heart. And the Bible says his thoughts are very deep. Look in Jeremiah 29. Jeremiah 29. And this time, verse 10. For thus saith the Lord, that after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you in causing you to return to this place. For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace, not of evil, to give you an expected end. Now, that's the case, of course, with Israel. He's promised them for a long time that if they continued on the route they were going, he was going to take them off to Babylon, take them into captivity and destroy them, and he did. And now he's saying, you know, I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace. He's not primarily a warlike God towards you. He does not want adversity with you. He would like to, he thinks thoughts of peace. That's why he sent his son Jesus Christ for you. That's why he made peace possible. That's why he makes joy possible. He goes on to say, thoughts of peace, not of evil, to give you an expected end. There's that expectation thing. That's what hope is. It's expectation. And so he wants you to get in the book so you can anticipate and expect the next thing to happen that he's going to do, knowing that it's God and his thoughts towards you are peace. Look, if you will, at just a couple other spots. Look in Micah chapter 4. Micah. Micah chapter 4. Just thinking about the Lord's thoughts are very deep. Micah chapter 4. Go on down to verse 11. Now also many nations are gathered against me, against thee, that say, let her be defiled, let our eyes look upon Zion. So he's talking about Jerusalem. But they know not the thoughts of the Lord, neither understand they his counsel. He shall gather them as the sheaves unto the floor. I mean, so it's not just the fact that he wants us to know, you know, the goodness he intends toward us, but also he wants us to know, because otherwise it's total disaster. Let me point you to Hosea chapter 4, and I don't think the word thoughts is in here. Hosea, book of Hosea chapter 4, and thinking about those thoughts, God's thoughts plainly are filled with knowledge. Hosea chapter 4, and you should be reminded how important, you know, what those thoughts get you. Hosea 4, and if I can find Hosea 4, verse 6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee. And thou shalt be no priest to me, seeing that thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will forget thy children. So we have to apply that to ourselves devotionally, spiritually. But the fact of the matter is, man, folks, in Laodicea, God's people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. You have this stupidest batch of Christians of all time right now. I mean, I'm serious. And we, bunch of, whatever Christianity came out of the Dark Ages and the Roman Catholic imposed, blackness there, it's pretty black right now. So my point, ladies and gentlemen, is that to be in a place where you have a book that's uplifted and elevated, magnified, so that you could know that you should be interested in it, with the Lord speaking to you through it, on a week-by-week basis, is a very, very important thing. Okay, back to Psalms chapter 92, verse 5. O Lord, how great are thy works! Thy thoughts are very deep. And then he says, a brutish man knoweth not, neither doth a fool understand this. So he's comparing God's people who should be acquiring the thoughts of God's heart, coming to understand those thoughts. God's thoughts are very deep. And he says, a brutish man knoweth not, neither doth a fool understand this. So the other side of the spectrum is the brutish man. Now go back to Proverbs chapter 12 for a second. Proverbs 12. Notice what the Lord says about the brutes, the brutish. Whoso, chapter 12, verse 1, whoso loveth instruction, loveth knowledge. He that hateth reproof is brutish. What you find connected all the time in Proverbs with instruction is reproof. Over and over again, they are paired together. You don't really get instruction. You're not really taught anything unless you're reproved about something being wrong. In other words, no, that's not right. This is what's right. You get a red mark there. And if you're unwilling to be told, no, no, you're wrong about that, then you're in bad shape. And according to the Bible, that leads you to brutishness, just being a brutish person. That's somebody that doesn't know anything about anything. Look, if you will, in Jeremiah chapter 10. In Jeremiah 10. That's what a brutish person is. It's more of a brute. He's acting out of his own measure. He's acting naturally, more or less, animal instincts. Jeremiah chapter 10. Now, this passage is about idolatry. That much is true. But notice verse 7. Who would not fear thee, O King of nations? For to thee doth it appertain. For as much as among all the wise men of the nations and in all their kingdoms, there is none like unto thee. For they are altogether brutish and foolish. The stock is a doctrine of vanities. Okay, now that being said, let me take you on down to verse 14. Notice every man is brutish now in his knowledge. We're talking about somebody aspiring to understand the thoughts of God, and my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Folks, Christianity is destroyed for not understanding the Bible. And you just need to understand that every man is brutish in his knowledge. You shouldn't be brutish in your knowledge. You're brutish in your knowledge when you spend your time saying, well, I think, well, brother so-and-so says, you know, there comes a point where you have to knock that stuff off. You either have a Bible or you don't. And there's nothing wrong with saying that the preacher said this with the understanding that that's not the final word. The final word is what the preacher's speaking from. If what the preacher spoke from was the word, then that was right. But to not acknowledge that, to just say, well, I think, well, nobody cares what you think. That's how you got in trouble to start with, what you were thinking. And the advice you followed of the guy that thought something is what got you in trouble. So again, you get back to knowing God, knowing God's thoughts through the book. And so it says in Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 14, every man is brutish in his knowledge. Every founder is confounded by the graven image. Now, I know it's talking about actual graven images, but notice he says, brutish in his knowledge, and the founder is confounded. Now, being confounded is more or less like being confused in your mind. And I would say this, the only idols that are built are not of graven stone or molten metal. We build images and idols in our minds all the time. And again, I think that's one of the ultimate, what would you call them? It's the ultimate problem that Christianity has, is that they all build a Jesus Christ after their own image. They want him to be what they want him to be. If they belong to the vegan club, then Jesus is vegan. You know, if they are part of the NRA or drive an SUV, well, that Jesus does too. It's the whole what would Jesus do thing, but all, as all applied to me. And we all have a tendency to kind of try to mold Jesus' opinions into ours, like, you know, how could he disagree with me? And that's idolatry. Because he does not think like you. The common sense that you exercise is sometimes sense and sometimes common stupidity. And what he exercises is not common sense. What he exercises is sovereign knowledge. So my point simply is just that you have to be careful about that stuff, and you got to be careful about building an image of Jesus or God in your mind, because that's what people have done in this day and age. That's how you can have some churches doing what they're doing. Now, going back on down to Jeremiah chapter 8, skip on down to verse 21. And notice the real problem, part of problem. For the pastors are become brutish, so they're not seeking the mind of the Lord any more than anybody else. They're experts, they have education, and so they what they propose that Jesus is, most people just accept because, after all, they're smarter than me and they have 4 years in seminary. And it's it is disaster because the pastors are become brutish. They have not sought the Lord. Therefore, they shall not prosper, and all their flocks shall be scattered. So that's the problem. Just one other thing here, a couple other things. 2 Peter chapter 2, taking it to the New Testament. This brutish thing. The whole point is, folks, conform. Do the best you can to access the mind of God and conform your thoughts, the thoughts of your heart, to His. Learn His precepts. Don't just always run around and, you know, you're ultra spiritual if you're not careful. And so you're seeking God's direction. And if you're not careful, you know, you're finding God's direction in little things that happen. You know, if this happens, that must mean that God does that. And if the phone rings now, that must mean that God was trying to do this, and so on and so forth. Well, how about precepts? How about the fact that God lays down one precept after another, that something that's always true? Why don't you follow that instead of always being swayed down some path because you think that God is blindly leading you hither, thither, and yon? Why don't you go to the book and stick with what the book says? 2 Peter chapter 2, and notice down in verse 12, he uses the brute here again. I want you to see verse 10. Notice how these folks are thinking, though. Chiefly them that walk after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise government. That's not just despising, you know, the U.S. government. That's despising being governed. Maybe the crowd that's in charge is not somebody you like. Well, you're still not supposed to despise being governed, because according to Romans 13, God is still governing through them, whether you like what they're doing or not. Verse 10, presumptuous are they, self-willed. Now, they're thinking something, right? They are not afraid to speak evil of dignities. Whereas angels which are greater in power and might bring not railing accusation against them before the Lord, but these as natural brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of things they what? Understand not. And this is, you know, this is somebody that hasn't gone and found the mind of the Lord on something. And so they're speaking things they understand not. It's a mental issue. So anyway, let's go back to Psalms chapter 92. And suffice to say that we should endeavor to seek the mind of the Lord. Back to verse 6. A brutish man knoweth not, neither doth a fool understand this. When the wicked spring as the grass, when all the workers of iniquity do flourish, it is that they shall be destroyed forever. And so you see the world going to hell in a handbasket. And each generation says that. For as long as I've been a Christian, each generation of Christian men that I've known have said, it's bad. It's just rude. I don't know how much worse it can get. Well, it just continues to get worse. But you just need to see that what's happening there. Now, I don't want to discourage something that's good enough. I really just as soon not see us destroyed. I don't really want to be overrun by aliens. I really don't want to be in some sort of civil war here, right? So I hope that, you know, in the end, I'm praying that the Lord allows us to live in honesty and sincerity and continue to put out the gospel and live our Christian lives. But you should just know that God's ultimate end is that all men eventually pick a side, and most of them are against Him. Then His desire is to gather them together and destroy them. Now let me show you that. Look, if you wouldn't mind, in the book of Zephaniah, of all places, Zephaniah chapter 3. Like I said, while you just have to take in a measure some things, the Make America Great Again movement, that's all fine. It would be nice to have some more gracious reprieve, right, from complete whatever it's going to be, you know, or something like that. But at the same time, you need to understand that what the Lord's going to do, every single dispensation ends in apostasy. And so you shouldn't think that we are on some sort of a spiritual revival here because the economy's improving and because the tariffs worked. Okay? Because I got news for you. Nothing's changed on the queer agenda. The Republicans won't even address that, will they? No, they won't. Now, look what the Lord is doing. The book of Zephaniah. And I'm preaching, so I didn't even find it yet. Zephaniah chapter 3. Now notice what the Lord's going to do. Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 8. Therefore, wait ye upon me, saith the Lord, until the day that I rise up to the prey. For my, determination is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms, to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger, for all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. And when you go read through Daniel, all the nations of the earth, you know what they all are? What do they all have in common? One category. They're all beasts. Notice that? All the nations he mentions, he considers them beasts. Only Israel is not a beast. And so, what do beasts do? Well, beasts devour one another. They fight and they devour one another. And my point simply is that before you get totally aboard with making America great again, the question becomes, was it ever, for one? But two, this is, you're going to see fluctuations of better, worse, better, worse, better, worse. That's gone on for years and years. But as far as you living in the perilous times, the end days, the rapture is right around the corner, the time of Jacob's trouble is almost here, right? We get out first and all that stuff. But the bottom line is, ladies and gentlemen, that the Lord is going to gather these nations together to smash them. Look, if you will, in, where was the next place I was going to take you? Let me take you to, if I can find my, there it is, Revelation chapter 16, Revelation 16. Okay, now these angels pouring out these vials of the wrath of God, the plagues. And so you have first angel, second angel, third angel, fourth angel, fifth angel. Then the verse 12, the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates. The water thereof was dried up, and the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, out of the mouth of the false prophet. So here are spirits coming out of these, well, the devil and the false prophet, the Antichrist's mouths, right? And they represent themselves as frogs, which is a thought. But anyway, verse 14, for they are the spirits of devils working miracles which go forth unto the kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of the great day of God Almighty. Where this is all leading with all the United Nations stuff and everybody getting together, and whatever fluctuations of the changes are, just week to week, month to month, year to year, what's going to happen in the end is that they're going to all draw together against Jerusalem, against the Jews, and against God, and God's going to smash them. That's where this all ends. So as much as fine, I like the president, I like some people around him and all those things, but we're not going into spiritual revival. That's not what's happening. You know that by some things that they simply won't touch, won't talk about, and they never will, and they're not going to. And what's going to happen is we're going to continue the spiritual down spiral with people like us doing the best we can to just keep our little patch hoed and cultivated and fruitful. What you've been now reduced to taking care of your little plot, what God's given you to do. and you should be honored that you have that, you know, that privilege, and do the best you can. And when he shows up and smashes everything, he says, hey, good job. Like that. That's what you're shooting for now. We're not going into national revival. Okay, back to Psalms 92. Okay, verse 7, when the wicked spring as the grass, when all the workers of iniquity do flourish, it is that they shall be destroyed forever. But thou, Lord, art most high forevermore. So if the Lord, we all know that the Lord is the most high God, right? Okay, God being most high, he's going to be most high. That means that there must be other lesser small g gods. He's the most high God, then there are other gods. There be gods many and lords many. And that also means something for your battle. Now, you know this as well as I do, but 2 Corinthians chapter 10. And notice where in Psalms it says here, but thou, Lord, art most high forevermore. So anything that attempts to climb, ascend the heights, and pull God's glory down lower and usurp it is demonic. It's satanic, right? That was the devil's statements. He said, I will be like the Most High. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. That was the devil's ploy. So what you have to be careful of within your own heart and soul is that there's something, not that you don't allow something rise up in you that tries to usurp the Most High. Now that includes your imaginations, your ambitions, your rebellion, where you just don't agree that you know with God that this is the way it should be, and so you basically just disobey him. Now notice 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3. Now remember, he's the Most High God. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. So it's not a bodily battle, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. These are strongholds in you that need to be pulled down. Casting down imaginations. We can start there. They're to be cast down because imaginations, I don't know what kind of mind you have. I don't know, maybe an artistic mind or I'm not sure whose mind is more imaginative than another. I know that my imaginations can get away from me. And one of your problems is the things that you think, the things that you lay in bed at night and imagine. And it says casting down imaginations. Because if you're not careful, those things are trying to ascend and get above God. And God says, don't think that. And you say, but I like thinking this. I mean, I've cultivated a whole habit, a whole character around thinking like this. How dare you tell me not to think this? Verse 3, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself. And once again, we're back to it, aren't we? Against the knowledge of God. Here you are with the thoughts of the Lord are very deep. Those are thoughts, things that God knows, understands. He's adjured you, exhorted you to move forward and know what he knows. Come to understand what he understands. Bits and pieces of it, slivers of it. He says you need to cast down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, bringing into captivity every thought unto the obedience of Christ. Now, what's your worst problem? The worst problems that you have are the thoughts of your heart. It's the imaginations of your heart. It's the habits of thought you fall into, and unless you slip up, you know, people around you don't even know you're thinking it. But God knows you're thinking it. And if you're not careful, you know, you effectively try to decrease God's ascendancy in your life. That's what rebellion is. So he's the Most High God. Labor to keep him there. Make sure you're not trying to scale where the devil tried to scale. Back to verse 8 of Psalm 92. But thou, Lord, art most high forevermore. For lo, thine enemies, O Lord, for lo, thine enemies shall perish. All the workers of iniquity shall be scattered. But my horn shalt thou exalt like the horn of an unicorn, and shall be anointed with fresh oil. Okay, the horn of the unicorn. The unicorn shows up 9 times in the Bible. In the New Versions, it's always a wild ox. Apparently with one horn. I don't know. But I can't tell you what a unicorn is. I know it's, if we went through all the verses, it's acknowledged for strength. It also so seems to be one of those creatures like a bull or a bullock or a dog that the Lord destroys in Edom at his second coming. Apparently it's a spiritual thing. It's talking here about the horn of the unicorn. Verse, which verse am I in? Verse 10, but my horn shalt thou exalt like the horn of a unicorn. Now, so think, you know, it talks about over and over again, somebody's horn is exalted or somebody's horn is humbled in the dirt. And so think about a horn kind of like a coat of arms. You know, the old Scottish Celtic tribes, you know, they would have a coat of arms, or they would have a family staff or war sword or shield, but there were emblems. And so think of the horn. I think it's something like that, where it may be a horn that can be blown, you know, like that. But it's going to be decorated. It's going to represent your tribe or your family, your nation. And so it keeps talking about a horn being exalted or a horn being debased. And so the whole idea here is that, but my horn shalt thou exalt like the horn of a unicorn. It's David saying, you're going to take my coat of arms, my family emblem, and you're going to elevate that, and you're going to destroy somebody else's like that. Verse 11, mine eyes also shall see my desire upon mine enemies. Now, here's David saying that. David is a type of who? Jesus Christ. You think Jesus Christ might have thoughts like that for the future? And he coming back in flaming fire, taking vengeance on them that know not God and obey not the gospel. Okay. Mine eye shall also see my desire on mine enemies. I was just reading late in Psalms this week, finished Psalms. You know, happy shall he be that taketh thy little ones and dash them against the stones. The second advent, the wicked heathen nations, right? Okay, Jesus Christ, mine eye also shall see my desire upon mine enemies, and mine ears shall hear my desire of the wicked that rise up against me. The righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. So that's a promise for somebody in the Great Tribulation and the Millennium. We would take it for ourselves. The righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. All right? So, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but he shall be like a tree planted by rivers of water. Okay, what kind of tree? It might be a palm. And the palm tree is a pretty interesting thing. First of all, there's a whole bunch of different types. You know, there's coconut palms and date palms, and just there's hundreds of different varieties. This is probably talking about the date palm, the Judean date palm, because it is talking about Judea. Those palm trees are now rare, fairly rare. People of old claimed that they had 360 different uses: food, rope, wine, building material, medicinal stuff. The date palm was one of the cornerstones of life. It grew tall and straight in 3 basic sizes, interestingly enough: 30 feet, 60 feet, and 100 feet. Now, remember that parable where somebody brings forth fruit 30-fold, 60-fold, 100-fold? Isn't that weird how that would work? They have a really deep root system, thrives when everything else dies, and the best dates on the date palm are produced after 30 years, which is another interesting number in the Bible, right? I just read something recently. I looked it up. I guess it happened 20 years ago. But when they started going through Herod's temple, and archaeologists figured out, okay, this is Herod's temple, they found a jar with a bunch of palm seeds in it. Now, these are 2,000 years old as of 2008. In 2008, they actually germinated a palm seed that had been stored for 2,000 years. Now, isn't that cool? I wonder how many other seeds that works with. But considering that we're going to be given a resurrection after 2,000 years, that's pretty amazing. Anyway, he says, though, in verse 12, the righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. He shall grow like the cedar in Lebanon. Now, the cedars in Lebanon, you may know about those. The cedar trees were cut down by Hiram, and he sent them down to Solomon. Solomon used the cedar of Lebanon for wood in the tabernacle, the temple, as you know. The cedar tree, in spite of the fact that it grows on rocky surfaces, manages to get all the nutrients it needs. It is evergreen. It does not rot. It repels insects. So these are the two classic trees of Judea, of Israel. Back to verse 12. The righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. Now, I know this is a devotional application, but you should be planted something like that. Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1. He says, those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. You should want to flourish. So you get a little bit of a hint there about what it's all about. And part of it is this. I know this is not everything. This is not, I'm not going to reduce this to just an attendance, final, closing part of the message. But Colossians chapter 1, go on down to verse 23. Just don't forget where you're supposed to be rooted, right? 1:23. Let me find out where to start here. Verse 21, you that were sometimes alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now hath he reconciled in the body of his flesh through death to present you holy and unblameable, unreprovable in his sight, if you continue in the faith, grounded and settled, be not moved away from the hope of the gospel, which you have heard and which was preached to every creature which is under heaven, but if you continue in the faith, grounded and settled. So you're supposed to be grounded somewhere, settled somewhere, rooted somewhere. Look in chapter 2 and notice verse 7. Rooted and built up in him, and established in the faith as ye have been taught, abounding therein with thanksgiving. So be rooted and built up in Jesus Christ. Now, the final blow. 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy 3. Verse 14, these things write I unto thee, hoping to come unto thee shortly. But if I tarry long, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God. Now he's just told Timothy about the election of elders and pastors. So it's a local church he's talking about. We don't make a big deal about this being the house of God or anything like that, because we each know that we each of us are temples of the Holy Ghost, right? Nevertheless, the context here is the local church, and it says that thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, and notice, the pillar and ground of the truth. Again, this is a church that has just been told how to elect deacons and pastors and the qualifications for them. And then it says it's the pillar and ground of the truth. What's supposed to be, at least to have a center, be a center post in the Christian's life, is the right church. It's supposed to be that way. I know it's been abused 1,000 times, but I'm still not going to back off. Because where would you be tonight if you didn't have the right kind of church? I don't know where I would be. You say, well, you're the pastor. Well, but I was doing this before I was a pastor. And I'm telling you, what squared away things in my life was finding Jesus Christ and finding the book, yes. But it took a church to ground me and settle me to be my pillar, my rock, and my ground so that I could be what I'm supposed to be. So anyway, all right, that's all I got tonight. I'm going to have Hannah come and give her testimony real quick.